Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the VF1 show. I am Vincenzo Landino. We are back from a short little hiatus. Apologize to you all. I was too busy welcoming my little daughter into the world. So aww. We took a break. We took a quick little break, but we're back to it while she's sleeping. And we're gonna jump into this episode. Some fun stuff that I don't know. Tickles my fancy, but I know it does tickle your fancy too, B. How you doing today? What's the biggest revelation you've had in F1 over the last 2 weeks? Because it's been 2 weeks.
God, like, I feel like we're definitely in the part of silly season right now where it's not like just silly season when it comes to driving or drivers moving around the grid, but also rumors of different personnel moving around the grid. We're having sponsorship deals. We're having all sorts of things. The F1 is F1ing right now. And I'm not the most like dramatic person, like when it comes to celebrity gossip and shit like that. But when it comes to F1, it just gets me going. So I'm excited about what's happening.
Yeah.
How are you?
Fantastic. I mean, truly, truly fantastic and tired. And yeah. But I will say that my first daughter was born during the Australian Grand Prix in 2020 when Ferrari won. And my second daughter was just born during the Chinese Grand Prix, which Ferrari didn't win. So I'm now 50%. I was like, okay, I'm going to have daughters on Ferrari race win weekends. And that wasn't the case. So I'm a little disappointed, but it's okay. It's all right. Couple things I guess we should talk about. Number one, Nico Hülkenberg is going to leave Haas at the end of the year. He is confirmed for Kick, Stake, Sauber, which we know is turning into Audi at the end of 25. So that's our end of 24. End of 25. Sorry, I'm like thinking, what are we in? So that's big news. And the other big news, well, to add on to that point, is who's going to be the second driver there. So Nico's in, which means that Zhou and Bottas are likely to be out because there's going to be another driver there. I mean, I guess they could keep one of them, but it's unlikely. It looks very unlikely they will. It sounds like Sainz may be the one. We've talked about that before, that we thought Sainz would go there. I'd love to see Sainz at Red Bull paired up with Max. I don't know if personalities and whatnot will fit at this point of their career, but I think that would be a great move for Carlos. There was rumor or speculation that the offer that Audi had given Carlos was a lot, and Red Bull have said that they couldn't match or beat it, which is interesting. But also, I don't blame Carlos if he truly did reject it. I don't blame him because you're going to be stuck at a team right now that is going nowhere for at least a year, and then you're going to be stuck for at least another year or two on a team that's new to the grid, figuring things out. No matter how impactful many people think Audi may be, I don't think anyone believes that they're going to be fighting for wins right away. You know, maybe they might get a podium or something, but I don't think anyone thinks it's going to happen immediately. And Carlos is at that point. You know, he's what, 29 or so. Like, you've got to think that he needs to be somewhere where he is put in a car that can win the minute he joins, right? And there's really only one team that can do that outside of the team he's on, and that's Red Bull. There's the only team with a seat. No one believes that Mercedes has an opportunity to do anything. McLaren is all set with their two drivers. Aston Martin is clearly set unless Lawrence Stroll decides to move on from his son. So there's really no other availability for him.
Yeah.
I don't blame him for not accepting Audi, but also if his delayed response keeps him from getting a seat, he could actually be on the outside looking in, which is crazy. Going from Ferrari to, you know, he's having a solid season. He's not having a poor season by any stretch. And he could potentially not have a seat.
Yeah.
So that was, I thought, pretty interesting. What do you think? Is there anything you want to add to Hülkenberg signing at Audi, which happened just this morning?
I think it was the right move. And when you look at Haas, I mean, them canning Gunther right before the season was going to start, you knew that Gene was kind of maybe in more of a serious mode. Although, again, promoting somebody that was part of the problem from the Gunther Steiner era, I think it wasn't the move. But then again, I think they had to deal with or use rather the personnel that they had at the time, and maybe they just thought that he was the best person. So I get it, but I also wonder who Haas is going to get to fill those seats, right? Those vacancies that are coming from this. Again, if both drivers end up signing elsewhere.
Well, I think the idea that Ollie Bearman is going to end up being in a seat in one of those seats is a possibility.
Yeah, True.
So again, there's, you know, shakeups there, which would be cool. It'd be great to have a young driver in a seat, you know, actually working towards something bigger.
Yeah. I also, when it comes to Carlos Sainz, I think when you look at Audi and their potential, you know, it's there. Obviously they have the connection with his father and it just, it seems like it would be the right fit. But again, to your point, he is getting older and he's looking for a seat where he could possibly win and be on constructors winning teams.
Red Bull puts him in that perfect position.
Honestly, it's crazy to say this, but again, we're in an era where drivers are making so much money off their name now. And it's sort of an unprecedented era in Formula One where drivers, I mean, they're launching brands left, right, and center. And so maybe he could sign with Red Bull for a reduced deal, but knowing he could make that money elsewhere, maybe not on the grid itself, but through other sponsorships or through, you know, his own brand deals, etc. So the money is definitely there. And I will say this is a weird time where it's not necessarily, I think, the contract itself that is a draw, but the potential for wins. Because when you're winning and when you're consistently on the podium and when you're consistently being talked about, brands want to do business with you. So that automatically boosts your stock in the on the business side of it. So yeah. I think Red Bull, regardless if they can or can't match what Audi or any other team could give Carlos Sainz, I think they need to give him the best deal that they've got because I think he's the best driver on the grid that they're going to get this cycle. And regardless of his relationship with Max, I mean, they seem cordial, but I think right now with everything that's been going on with Red Bull, I mean, we'll talk about Adrian Newey in a bit, but everything that's been happening with Christian Horner and now Newey and everything, all the drama, they need a driver who can kind of, I don't want to say provide some stability because they have stability with their own driver, right? With Max, with Carlos can just get in the car and he can drive. And I think that he provides that sort of stability right now that Red Bull might need. And especially if the Adrian Newey rumors end up being true. So I think Carlos would be the best move for them moving forward. I don't think Audi, I don't think Carlos wants to be part of a project right now. He's not a project driver. He's an I want to win driver. And we have to respect that too. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how the musical cars plays out for the rest of the season. But I do think that Carlos needs to make that decision now because like you said, there's tons of junior drivers coming up who want those seats. There are tons of other drivers that are going to be available on the grid. And it's pretty obvious, I think, who Red Bull's second pick would be. And I do think that would be Checo because at least he's safe. They know what they're getting with him.
Yeah. And I think you could at least keep, you know, there's the idea that he's a kind of a gap year guy, right? Like we'll probably convince Checo to stick around for at least another year. You don't have to sign him for more than that. We're worst case. And then they can just figure it out again at the end of the following year. As long as that's a Max first team though, yeah. I don't think it necessarily, I don't want to say it doesn't matter because you need points. But as we saw in, was it last year or 2 years ago where Max had enough points to win the Constructors Championship on his own. It was last year, right? So yeah, you're right. Absolute worst. And listen, I don't think Checo's playing the game. He's what, 33 himself, 34. Mm-hmm. So he's not playing that game of, oh, well, fine. If you don't want to sign me to a longer deal, then I'm going to go explore elsewhere. Like, no, you're not. If Red Bull at this point, at least before the next set of regulations, that car is clearly the best. You want to keep yourself in that car, right? Like there's no need for you to change. So yeah, I do think you are right. And honestly, if I'm Sainz, like you said, just take a smaller, I don't think this is about the money for Sainz really. I think he wants to get himself into the right seat and there really is only one option, but that doesn't give him a lot of leverage either. So,
right. But did he have a lot of leverage at Ferrari either? I mean, Ferrari is it seems like it's always been the team of Charles.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't know.
And people were shocked that they chose to move on from that lineup because I think they were pretty good together.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, we'll never really know.
Yeah.
The marketability is happening behind the scenes, right?
Yeah.
With when it comes to Charles and Carlos, I think Carlos would have had to have been head and shoulders better than Leclerc. I mean, head and shoulder, not tenths, but he's not, right? Like the telemetry doesn't show otherwise, even though he's got what, you know, three wins now and Charles hasn't had a win since Carlos's first or something. I gotta look back exactly how it's panned out.
But it's been, you're such a Ferrari guy, and it's been so long since he's had a win. You don't recall from his last.
Well, I keep because I keep thinking last year is 22, but last year was 23, yeah. And it's almost like it's such a blur, right?
Yeah.
But the point is, he would have to have been just head and shoulders better. And I think I like Carlos a lot, and I've also been someone that's questioned it. Was he the wrong one to move away from?
Yeah.
But I think Leclerc brings such a Ferrari feel to the team. It's it's this generation's Schumacher for them. Even though, again, the on-track results aren't there, I think there's the vibe inside of Maranello that this is our guy. And I'm not talking about like their styles. Obviously, they're night and day different. Yeah. Schumacher's on another level. I'm just saying that in terms of like being a generational guy, he's the generational guy for this generation of Ferrari.
But at the same time, though, when you've got Sir Lewis Hamilton coming in next season, is he going to usurp that?
No, and that's not even, that's aside from, like, I haven't even... Lewis hasn't even entered my conversation at this point. I'm thinking like that's why Carlos was the easy one to not bother re-signing. When you have the opportunity to sign Lewis Hamilton, regardless of what he brings you on track, I think you have to take that opportunity. I mean, he doesn't have the car right now, so I think that's easier to chalk up and say, you know what, like, give him a better car. And if he's still not producing, obviously it's easier to cut bait if he's not producing, right? Although we're seeing with Ricardo that a little bit of, like, if you compare Danny Ric and Hamilton's miles better in every aspect of things, right? Like, their on-track records and off the track, right? What they bring from a fashion and a branding and a marketing perspective. Like, yeah, he creates a little waves in some subculture circles of the US and in obviously in Australia, but nothing is Lewis Hamilton. So Ferrari is entering a different
era.
It's a different era. I mean, this episode will probably end up being all about Ferrari in general, but it is a new era. The lead, I guess what I really wanted to get into today was about, and this ties all into Lewis at this point. It's kind of like, what is it? 5 degrees, 8 degrees of Kevin Bacon, 7 degrees. What's the?
I don't know where you're going with this.
Yes, you do. It's 7.
You know
what I'm talking about. It's 7 degrees. Yeah, the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing. Have you ever heard this before?
No.
Or the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Is so it
the
Kevin 6 degrees Bacon, of Kevin actor from like the '80s.
Are you serious? You don't know who Kevin Bacon is?
Is Kevin Bacon?
Oh my God! Wow. We're the same age, and you don't know who Kevin Bacon is.
Kevin Bacon is okay. Come on.
So Bacon's Law, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, Bacon's Law. It's this parlor game where you challenge another player to choose an actor and then connect them to another actor via films they've appeared in and basically find the shortest path to Kevin Bacon. So this is going to be the 6 degrees of Lewis Hamilton is what I was going to get at. Anyway,
I get where you're going with this.
I mean, Footloose, you've never heard of Footloose before?
Of course I've heard of Footloose. I just didn't.
That's Kevin Bacon.
Okay. But like, okay.
Oh,
for the people
wow.
listening to this, you need to, I'm not really a movie person. Okay.
Okay. So, I mean, that's fair, I guess.
I was raised in Southern California, but I never I didn't care about celebrities. So I don't, you know, it's just how it is.
All right.
Drivers,
well, anyway,
on the other hand.
Lewis Hamilton. Earlier this week, it was officially announced that Ferrari was signing a title sponsor. Now, it's significant because Ferrari hasn't had a lot of title sponsors.
Yeah.
And to date, they've had two. Marlboro between like 97 and 2011. And now Mission Winnow, which is essentially Marlboro anyway, or Philip Morris. They've had them intermittently since. This is now the Scuderia Ferrari HP. That's their team. That's the team name. And so that's significant. And the HP deal, HP is Hewlett-Packard, a technology company in the United States. Big, large company, a stock-traded company, an American company. It's American money coming into the series, coming into Ferrari. This actually levels the amount of sponsors. So Ferrari has historically had a lot of Italian sponsors. Italian and American sponsorship is at a dead tie now on the Italian car, on the Ferrari car. And so that's significant, but also the numbers of this deal, which haven't been officially reported, and I'm guessing we're never going to really get to know the exact numbers, but the whispers amongst the sponsorship folks is that it is very similar to what the Oracle Red Bull deal was. Oracle, another American tech company sponsoring Red Bull, title sponsorship. That was rumored, or not rumored, that was like a 5-year, $300 million deal. This one I've heard anywhere between 80 to 100 million is what I've been hearing from a couple of different sponsorship folks. that work directly with teams and, you know, putting these sponsorship deals together. That's a huge amount of money. Yeah. There was in one of the press releases or articles that I had read where they had talked to, you know, whoever it was, whether it was at Ferrari or HP or whatever, was like, this is going to help basically pay for Lewis, right? Yeah. Because driver salaries are not part of the cost cap. So you can leverage, you know, you can leverage that money, these sponsors. So when people are like, well, what do sponsors do in a cost cap era? What does it matter how much money you get? Well, yeah, if you get massive title sponsor like this, you can go and get yourself a great driver lineup. You can go and get yourself, yeah, you know, a Lewis Hamilton to race alongside Charles Leclerc. You could have probably gone and got Max, you know, Max Verstappen if he was looking for a new team. Like, so there's a lot of benefit.
And it's the two
to
top,
working with.
It's the two top personnel, right? The team principal and whoever else they choose.
For what?
For against the cost cap.
I don't think either driver. Well, no, either driver doesn't go against it.
The drivers
there might
don't
be
go against.
One or two, you're right.
It, yeah.
Yeah. It's something. It's something like that. One or two, maybe. Or I'd have to go and look exactly what. I never actually paid that much attention.
My mind is
really
telling
matter,
me it's the two top people in a team structure.
Yeah, which is why, like, the whole Adrian Newey's a consultant, yeah, so he's not technically all of that kind of went. People have been questioning those types of things as well.
Yeah,
and either way, the drivers don't cost. So yeah, that's your biggest expense, regardless, right? You've got a Lewis Hamilton who's going to make $50 million, whatever he's making per year. Charles Leclerc, another $40 to $50 million a year. I mean, those are massive numbers. If you have a sponsorship that's coming in and paying you $80 to $100 million a year, that offsets your driver costs. Now you can focus on spending your money on, you know, hitting that cost cap and doing other things. It's very, very important. Somebody had asked me on Twitter, actually had responded and said, why would HP, like, what benefit is this for HP? And the fact that so many people don't understand how powerful motorsport sponsorships are, especially at this level, leads me to believe that, number one, it's folks that maybe just don't understand motorsport in general, which is fine, or folks that don't understand how valuable this is from a global perspective. So yeah, Ferrari's doing couple things here, providing a lot of value, I would say, to HP, the biggest brand in Formula One. There's nobody bigger than Ferrari, period. Hard stop. In motorsport, maybe even in all of motorsport, the Ferrari name is top. So now HP instantly gains a ton of credibility attaching their name to that. You're also attaching your name to the biggest, maybe right now, the second biggest. I'm going to say Verstappen's name might be a little bit ahead of Hamilton, but not because of anything Hamilton's done, just because Max is winning. So it's kind of top of mind for everybody right now. Lewis is still the GOAT, period. But now you're HP and you're kind of getting a double whammy. You get to work with Lewis Hamilton and Ferrari at the same exact time. I mean, that's a huge win. And I'll tell you, executives at HP are probably absolutely having dance parties after they sign that. Just thinking of, like, fighting over who's going to actually get to go to the races and who's going to get to be in the meet and greets with Lewis Hamilton and who's going to get to be, you know, in the paddock and stuff like that. So it's a big win all around. And you've got to think that there's more. Ferrari has more planned once Lewis officially comes on board later on this year. You've got to think that early 25, you know, even late 24, there's going to be more sponsorship movement. And so it's setting up for, like, the moment here.
Yeah. Well, also.
Okay. I've said a lot about that.
Also, huge things to consider. What does this do for HP? Their products are going to be front and center. And people don't think about it. But when you have your cameras and they're in the garages and they've got all of the, you're kind of seeing what's happening in the garage, you're seeing what's happening with the pit crews of the teams, you don't realize how many logos are being put in front of you. But all of these logistics things, you've got the screens that are going up over the halo when they bring the car back into the garage, you're talking about the computers, you're talking about just all the different things, the logos that you see, the technology logos, and that branding is going to be front and center in that Ferrari garage. And it's not just going to happen in 2020. I think they're making their debut soon, right? And not only that, they're also, from what I've read, they are partnering not just with Scuderia Ferrari, but their esports team, their F1 Academy series. This is going to be tremendous brand coverage for HP. And I think right now, when you are also considering HP is a computer company, right? Software company, all that. we're in the era of Apple.
Technology company.
It's a technology company. Right. We're in the era of Apple. Whether people like it or not, Apple is still one of the number one most prominent pieces of technology. iPhones, MacBooks, you name it. And having that competitive placement, global competitive placement, it's huge when you're a technology company. It doesn't matter where on the spectrum you are in terms of your products. So they're going to be advertising their products on one of the most iconic racing teams in world history. The most iconic racing team in world history. So this isn't just a flash in the pan Red Bull team. This isn't, you know, and they've had a couple of them, but this isn't that. This is, it doesn't matter how bad Ferrari is, it's still Ferrari. And you're still going to go to races. You're going to still see thousands and thousands of people in Scuderia Ferrari gear. And that's just how it is. So HP gets a piece of that now in a massive way. And again, the fact that you've got F1 Academy that's joining the race schedule with Formula One, you imagine they're probably going to be spending a significant amount of money, of their own money, to amplify F1 Academy, knowing that it's their logos that they're also amplifying.
Yeah, I mean, it's a win-win all.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a win-win-win
all like around for everyone. And it's kind of funny because a lot of people are like, oh, HP, they have ink and this and that. It's like, okay, yeah, they make printers and they also make PCs and they make other things as well. But a lot of people, I don't think, realize that their HP is actually the second largest personal computer vendor right after Lenovo, who's also a Ferrari sponsor. And ahead of Dell. So like people are like, I had so many people that were like, who even has an HP computer or who buys an HP? Like
lots of
like,
people do.
There's a lot, because maybe just because here in the US they don't or whatever, but like it's still a massive company all around the world. And, you know, whatever, 25 billion market cap. I mean, it's not a small, tiny little company. Actually, I don't know if Lenovo still is. I'm actually looking at their site now. I don't know that Lenovo is, which it would make sense that they're not, but it looks like they're actually not on the Ferrari sponsor list anymore on the website. Hmm. Interesting. Well, I mean, not interesting. Maybe they were taking off earlier this year. I mean, it goes to show me paying attention or not. It might be dad brain, so I apologize to whoever, but
I wonder,
maybe they came off last year.
When you actually look at the racing kits for this weekend, or for not this weekend, for the Miami Grand Prix, and you see the HP logos on the racing suits, on the shirts, I wonder if that had anything, if the blue livery kind of had anything to do with that, because they are debuting HP.
HP is debuting this year.
At the Miami Grand Prix, if that was sort of like a motivator for the colorway.
I mean, it would make sense, right? It would make sense. Also, Lenovo, I think they actually have a partnership with F1 globally, like a F1 partnership, because they were with Ferrari, and I think that did end in 22, I should have realized that. Anyway, so I think it's an F1 partnership now, which is fine. Yeah. The livery will be interesting because historically, for those that don't know, historically, Ferrari has had blue, like pit crew suits in the past, and they ran a blue livery, blue and white, in the U.S., and Mexican Grand Prix. And the U.S. Grand Prix that year was at Watkins Glen. It was John Surtees that drove the Ferrari in white and blue under the NART team, North American Racing Team. Enzo Ferrari basically had a spat with the FIA. I mean, I'm not going to go into super detail, but like FIA and the Italian Federation. And he basically said, Ferrari will never race in red ever, or a red car will basically like never race again in Formula One. And he basically has a big FU to the FIA and the Italian Federation, doesn't even race under the Ferrari name, but races under NART in blue and white. So Ferrari decided that for the Miami Grand Prix, they're going to do this blue. We still haven't, I don't think, we haven't actually seen a livery. A buddy of mine, Chris, mocked up a design. It's on my Twitter account if anyone cares to go look at it. It's the pinned post, but he mocked up a really great looking design of what it could look like. And we went kind of fully blue and white with it. There's no red in it at all. I think we'll end up seeing maybe like a red stripe if they choose to go really blue, but it looks really cool.
Well, the Shell logo has red in it too.
And the Shell logo does have red. Yeah, you're right. But what is interesting is that, you know, HP does have a blue logo. So it's kind of like ironic that all of it is culminating into this Miami Grand Prix. And South Florida has a massive Ferrari fan base. Mm-hmm. And not just Ferrari F1, but like Ferrari fan base. Living in Palm Beach, I was part of the Ferrari Club, the Scuderia Ferrari Club of America, and the actual Ferrari Club for Ferraris. And massive. It's the Cavallino event in Palm Beach is the largest major maybe that changed, but as of 2 years ago, it was the largest, maybe even as of last year, it was the largest gathering for Ferrari owners and enthusiasts in Palm Beach. And that's where it was, right? So South Florida is like Ferrari country. So this is a perfect opportunity. This is going to be great for HP. This is going to be incredible for that.
Yeah.
It's only a shame that Lewis isn't already on the team. This would have made it even bigger.
Yeah.
But it's a, you know, it's a great move. It's a great move. A lot of people are like, oh, this is stupid. This is, why would they want to, you know, people were very insistent that this was not a good idea. And I say people, the people that don't matter, right? They're just random.
Yeah.
Internet keyboard warriors that are complaining about certain things. And
I think a lot of them, it's complaining about the heritage. Well, this is just eroding at the, like, how is this eroding at the heritage? Like,
well, listen, here's how I look at it. You have to always be progressing. You always have to be finding new ways to innovate things, and you have to find new ways to operate. And the thing is, you could operate in 19 if you want, and that's great. You could continue to do that, or you could continue to operate the way everyone else is, because, you know, Red Bull's not sitting there going, oh, well, our history. Now, granted, they don't have that kind of history, that kind of legacy, but they're not resting on their laurels, right? And we see this in other sports. I'm going to use the NFL as a perfect example, because my team has done this, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they tend to want to be this, you know, live back in the 70s, their heyday, where they won four championships and they had all these Hall of Famers and they won games because of defense, and that's great. But today's NFL, anyone that watched the NFL draft last night saw 15 offensive players go, or 13 or 15 offensive players go, I think it was 13 actually, before a defensive player came off the board, right? There was the most offensive players taken in the first round than ever before. For a team to be like, to ignore the fact that the game has changed to the point where it's a very offensive game. The rules have changed to become a very offensive game, and almost puts the defense on their heels, you know, even before they step out there. There's already rules that, you know, hinder the defense from being as physical and doing things the way they used to do them. Imagine being a team that's like, well, we're going to keep playing the way we did in 19.
Well, the teams have done that have suffered from that. Yep. So
it, and that's, I mean, it's no different with anything else. And so Ferrari has to step up to the game. You know, people are, oh, and listen, I'm one of those. Listen, I'm literally, you guys can't see me, but I've got a red racing flag next to me. I've got red jackets behind me and red caps, and I've Ferrari red. I mean, it's my life. I love Ferrari red, but you it's a business as much as it is a sport. And if changing the livery to throw back to a time where they raced in a certain color increases their visibility around an initiative or a new sponsor or whatever it might be, if that's something that they have to do to kind of play the game nowadays, I mean, there's worse things they can do, right? And to me, like, that's the least offensive thing that can be done.
Yeah. Well, as far as I see it, I think people need to understand that part of the formula in Formula One is adapting and using new regulations to your advantage and winning. That's the formula, essentially. And if you're not doing that, you're going to either be a miserably unsuccessful team with no fan base. You're going to lose money. No one's going to want to drive for you. You're kind of going to be forced to sell, because at some point, it doesn't matter how much money you have. If that's your business model, you're going to go bankrupt. That is completely unsustainable, right? So you can stay in that different era, or you can continue to adapt and excel and do well and you know, hope to compete decades down the line. And that's exactly what a lot of these teams have been able to do. They've been competitive and they've stayed in the game. And so with this HP chip, I mean, it's really not that deep when you actually look at the heart of Formula One right now and how much technology goes into this, right? We're talking even the sensors, the telemetry, everything around the track, all the data, the millions of data that gets fed into these computers every race week to decide your strategy and all these different things, that is all done by computer. Okay. To have a partnership with Oracle, with HP, with these companies that just bring this incredible level of technological advancement, it is going to help your team win. It's going to help your team get the data that they need so that you can have the best chance of being successful on track possible. So there's no way to lose in this, right? Unless you absolutely despise Ferrari and you want them to lose. But in the spirit of Formula One, I want more teams to be competitive than not. I would love to have three or four teams being ultra competitive every single single weekend to where you don't actually know who's going to win. So if this puts Ferrari any little bit closer to closing the gap and being able to consistently compete for wins, then this is a win for racing, because we don't want to get into a rut this season where we're continually every single week having the same results over and over and over again. I think this could potentially bring us to our next topic about Adrian Newey. Once you get to a point where you have achieved everything that there is to achieve, if this is the pinnacle of motorsport, what are you doing? It's time to move on. It's time to maybe find a new project. Maybe this is where the rumors of Adrian Newey potentially leaving Red Bull are coming into play.
Yeah, I mean, that's sounding more and more of a reality. There's been some reputable sources that have drop that rumor. Where he would go and what the, I think, specifics of his, like, would he need to take a gardening leave if he got out, if he left his contract early? I think all those things are questions right now. Like, is it going to happen? I mean, it also signals to me that there might be more going on at Red Bull than we know. Yeah. There was all that talk early on with the Christian Horner stuff, but did it go unreported, or did more happen that we don't even know about, right? Like, I think Adrian Newey could very well be the single biggest game changer for any team, right? He's clearly the best designer he's the best designer, period, hands down, in the history of Formula One. Him changing and going anywhere else. And this would probably very likely be the last move he ever makes, right? Because he's getting up there in age. He would be closer to 70, I think, by 20, or he might even be 70 by 20. So, I mean, you got to think, how much longer would he want to do this? And the one challenge that the one mountain that he hasn't climbed is taking Ferrari to victory. And everybody wants to wear red. I don't care what anyone says, but Sebastian Vettel, knew what he was talking about. Everybody loves Ferrari, no matter what. You're a fan, no matter what. Even Adrian Newey. And you know what? He'll just have to get used to eating Italian food, because I'm sure it's better than whatever he's eating in Milton Keynes.
Yeah. I think you said a few weeks ago that Ferrari is typically kind of where you go to retire. If you're in the position where you can choose, do I want to go to Ferrari, and you've been in the sport for this long, you can kind of pick and choose. And a lot of times when you go to Ferrari, that's it. That's the Schumacher deal. And perhaps this is going to be Adrian Newey's last stop. I mean, at some point you've got to hang it up. At some point you have to say, all right, I've done all that I can. I've now been the lead designer on several different championship winning teams. I have been the architect of cars that have gotten several drivers their championships. And what else is there, right? He's already written a book. That book is Bible in all motorsport. That book is Bible. What else is there to do? And I think that this could perhaps be that once in a lifetime kind of challenge for him to say, how can I fix you? Like, looking at something that is gorgeous and knowing that there's problems and saying, how can I fix you? Let me fix you. This could be that moment for him. And I do think that would be one hell of a good exclamation mark on his career, especially with everything that's been going on at Red Bull. Nobody actually knows what's happening. And I think this is still the issue that fans have, is that we can continue talking about the potentials of, this or that. We don't have any transparency. We don't really know anything. All we know is that they're keeping Christian Horner off the microphones these days. They don't want Christian Horner really being the mouthpiece for the team. And I think that kind of says what needs to be said, right? That potentially there is more going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. But if you have your lead designer who is getting ready, who's being rumored to be jumping ship, that might signal bigger problems for Red Bull down the line. And I just don't know how, and I guess this maybe goes into the conversation once again about Carlos Sainz. Could he see this as well and say, I want to know everything that's going on at Red Bull to make that determination of, is this where I want to be? Is this a team that is everyone going to be leaving? Is there going to be any sort of competitive consistency next season, or is everyone going to be gone? Am I going to have a new team principal? Am I going to have a new designer? Who's all the personnel going to be next year? What's the level of attrition going to be? Am I coming into the same team that is currently winning and operating at an extremely high level? Or am I going to come in to a fire sale? And I think that if that decision gets pushed back farther and farther by Carlos, meaning if he doesn't make his decision soon, it could potentially be because he knows things that we don't about the direction Red Bull is going in. And
we've got to think that any of these people do know more than we know, right? We're not in it. We're not there. They're hearing things that we truly are not. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, there's definitely a lot to be considered there. Yeah. And that's probably a reminder to all the fans out there that, you know, even not like a lot of what we talk about is ends up being speculation, right?
Yeah.
But you have to think that there's other things going on and you don't know about, we'll never know about. But when something does happen, there's, you know, there's, it's usually not as much of a surprise as, you know, things may seem like with Toto Wolff talking about, oh, it was a complete surprise to me about Lewis. Like, I mean, yeah, maybe it was a surprise the way he did it, but was it really a surprise? You haven't given him, haven't supported it, you know, clearly. Was it really a surprise if you really peel back the curtain? It's like, there's very rarely something that's that much of a blind side. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I think last real, this is real quick. We can actually just use it as a sign off too. I don't know if you saw this, but F1 launched a free streaming channel in the US yesterday. And it's a fast channel, meaning it's a free ad supported streaming channel. So it's essentially like, it's just ads, but it's like it would be like watching TV, right? A broadcast channel, only this is streaming. Mm-hmm. And there's like Samsung, Amazon, Freevee, Samsung's Plus, and I think Pluto TV are carrying it. There's some others. I didn't see the full list. Those were the three that stood out to me. It's going to have full races on it. Recaps, highlights, full races, period. Also recaps and highlights, as well as documentaries and historic races. It'll be running 24 races will go on there 5 days after the race happens. So if you're a casual fan that's like, I'm not going to spend $80 a year on F1 TV or $100 a year on F1 TV. I'm not going to wait up till 3 a.m. to watch a race or 12 or wake up early. I'm just, you know, I'm a casual. This is a great way to introduce F1. To those types of fans, kind of those fence sitter fans, right? It's very, sure, you don't get to watch the race in real time. Okay. And I mean, listen, I can't do that. I'm not that kind of fan, but I could totally see where someone's just like, I don't care that much, but I'm interested enough to be like, I'll throw it on now.
Yeah.
The documentaries pieces, there's going to be a lot, they claim that there's going to be a lot of like analysis type shows and things like that.
Which,
very cool.
It kind of makes me, okay, two things to that is that they're also going to have programming for F2, F3, and F1 Academy. Me, right? So if you're curious about that, but again, you don't want to watch it, you don't want to stay up for it, et cetera, you can't find it. And that's, I think, the biggest problem people have with F1 Academy is, how do I watch this, right? Nobody really knows where to watch it. So now I think there's going to be a home for that. But also, you know, when you think about Formula One fans and you think about trying to get people excited about something, it's putting it in front of them and hoping for the best, right? And that's typically how any product is introduced. You hope for the best. But with Formula One, it's kind of unique because they have so many people, including us, who are content creators, who make podcasts and do TikToks, et cetera, promoting the sport. And this does make me wonder, does this offer sort of an entry for potential content creators to say to F1, hey, you've got this new channel, let me help out? Or do you think F1 could potentially reach out to content creators and say, hey, maybe we don't have a slot for you in the schedule for you to actually go to a race and have an audition or have a whatever, but here's this new F1 channel that we have for you. We would love to have you audition for this. Do you think that could potentially be something down the line where F1 sort of bridges that sort of throws a bone to content creators, meaning like, you can be platformed by Formula One and we'll support you once and for all? Because, I mean, content creators do the majority of the heavy lifting for them. Let's be real.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the position that we've taken and will continue to take is that, that would be great.
Yeah.
Right. This would be awesome.
It's a great opportunity.
It's a great opportunity, especially here in the US. You have opportunity to use US based creators to fill you're filling 24 hours a day, right?
Yeah.
It's free content, essentially. Well, not free, but it's content
that you could.
No, it's F1 should compensate creators, right? Not just be like, oh, well, you're going to get on our platform. Okay. But either way, to me, it's a no-brainer. It would be, you're filling 24 hours a day, go and grab some creators to have them create shows. I mean, whatever it might be, have them create regular segments, whatever that looks like. Obviously it'll probably be a little more polished than just like what you see on TikTok, because that's just the F1 way of doing things, but it could surely add another dimension to, you know, how F1 targets and engages with that fence sitting audience, with that new audience that they want. want. Clearly they want. As much as people want to kick and scream and bitch and moan about how much the DTS audience is the downfall and this and that of the sport. I mean, listen, it is what it is. You could fight and scream all you want, but it's clearly what's happening. And their F1 is clearly going after them. That's everything they're doing. They are not mailing it. They are not being unclear about what they're going after. It's very apparent as to what they're trying to attract.
But at the same time, you've got those same people. They're typically Europeans. And then you've got DTF1, which is UK based, right? They're basically doing the same thing. They're taking content creators and they're creating an actual platform that competes with ESPN and Formula One, you know, obviously using that content, but they're creating their own platform within the fan base, right? And that's, I don't think there's a single American creator on their roster right now. It's all UK based. So is it really, is it really the Drive to Survive fan, which people like to say are uniquely American, which we know isn't true, but, you know, so that kind of shuts that argument down. But one thing I have noticed recently is that a lot of people who used to be exclusively F1 content creators are now starting to really push IndyCar. You're now seeing them MotoGP, IndyCar, you're seeing them at a ton of other different races. Series, and you're starting to notice even Lizzie McIntosh, she hasn't done anything for F1 this year. And you're starting to kind of see that deviation happening. And it's a lot of creators who are just kind of not really there right now with F1. And I've noticed that already. We're only a couple races into the season, like five or so races in, and I'm noticing that. And is that because people are getting bored with Formula One? Is that because content creators are getting bored with Formula One? They're saying there's no competition here. I'm bored. I've done this before. I'm looking for a new thing that's exciting. Yeah.
Well, I think there's a couple things, and I've worked in marketing. I've marketed for large brands. They've been my clients for a long time.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of influencer work. I've liaised a lot of influencers with brands. So understanding that process allows me to make the comments I'm about to make. Influencer marketing, it has matured. It's no longer good enough to offer exposure to a creator. Now, there's tons of creators that will still accept exposure. And they'll be okay with, you know, going to a race for free, and they're happy with that. But at some point, right, it doesn't matter what level of creator you are, you mature to a point where you need more. You need either payment, or you need more access, or you need something cool, right?
Yeah.
Because going to a race, like let's just say going to a race was what F1 is offering. That only gives you a piece of content one, two times. You can't constantly create that, right? You have to do something bigger and better. Maybe it's driving an F1 car. Maybe it's flying a fighter plane, you know, whatever, jumping out of a plane. Like there's different things that have to happen, right? You can't just, maybe it's being on a pit crew. Maybe it's making some calls as a race engineer, right? Like it's got to get bigger and better, more enticing for the audience to watch, or else views go down and then you're less valuable as a creator, right? Or the audience gets bored and then you're less valuable as a creator and then the brands don't even want you anyway. So that's why, like, just getting free shit doesn't, number one, doesn't pay the bills for creators. And number two, it doesn't give them as much access as they need to create cool content. Yeah. And we saw Red Bull do this with some YouTubers, Cleo Abram, my good friend, my wife's great friend, Austin Evans, a tech reviewer. They had incredible access to Red Bull and Max Verstappen. They had Max Verstappen in their videos, incredible videos that they were able to create. You know, that's where you need to, like, if you're going to give access and not pay, like, that's where it has to go.
Yeah.
And so there's a maturation. We're reaching an influencer maturation that they are not going to be happy with just like, oh, cool, you get to do this. And sure, we'll give you more. Great. F1, we're going to give you more free shit. We're going to give you more free content creation that you're going to leverage, and it's great for you. And what does it do for us? Right. So unless you are someone, and I'm going to use Lissy as an example, but she ended up getting more exposure because I'm sure she got paid to be the trackside reporter that she was, right? Like she didn't do it for free, I'm sure. If you get to that point, great, but not everyone's going to get to that point.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to get chosen to do things like that. And so you have to wonder, where does the line get drawn? And at some, you can only do it for so long before people are like, yeah, you know what?
I'm bored.
You're not doing what IMSA is doing for me, or NASCAR is allowing me to do, or this event is allowing me to do. And you know, there was a recent story with IndyCar that they kind of did something to a creator. There was a creator trying to, with like 36 million followers across his channels or something, and I don't even know who the creator was. I was just reading an article about it, and like IndyCar totally ghosted him. He wasn't even asking, he was willing to do it for nothing. He just wanted to go to the event, and like,
yeah,
he was getting more excited, and they completely ghosted him. So like you hear stuff like that, and you're like, okay, these series and these sports leagues, and they still don't get it. Like they're still not understanding. Until they realize the power of what is, like, what they have in front of them, the opportunities that they can present with creators and influencers, like they're just going to miss the mark. They're going to be so behind the eight ball until they get it. And that's what we're seeing in F1 right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we really are.
I mean, and I've noticed a lot of it with my friends too. My friends are, a lot of them are very casual. They like F1. They think it's, you know, obviously the girls are like, oh, the guys are cute. But a lot of my guy friends are just kind of like, I'll watch the recaps. I'll watch the reruns. I don't need to watch the whole race. I don't need to stay up late. I don't need to wake up early. It's very predictable and there's nothing new, right? So until F1 has something new, maybe the new regulations, maybe a new team on track, then it's kind of the same old, same old. And so this goes to the point of when is Formula One going to kind of realize that this is the ultimate Yelp review. I will say this like this. How fans interact with F1 is the ultimate Yelp review. Being that If fans are excited about what's going on, if fans are just, you know, into it, if they're excited about the on-track product, if they're excited about the partnerships, the technology, the more fans are talking about the sport, the more people are going to want to, you know, go to the restaurant and sit down, right? And so I think, again, going back to the Formula One channel, if they really want to leverage the fans into building up the fan base, into saying, okay, maybe we're moving on from the Drive to Survive fan base. Maybe the DTS fan base is starting to go down a little bit, and that's okay. What can we do to retain fans? Maybe we should involve them in what we're doing. And I think that would be the next best step for F1. So F1, if any of you guys happen to stumble upon this podcast, we would love to help you out with this.
Yeah.
But
no, you're right.
It's just how it is. And I think, again, if people really understood, it's not even so much who's winning on track. I think there's so many exciting technical things that happen that people still have no clue about because either that content just isn't being readily put in front of them or it's just not being prioritized in the broadcast, right? So if you're not looking for it, you're not going to find it. And I've noticed a lot of what F1 has been doing this year, they're making these little TikToks that explain things. But again, that's only putting it in front of the TikTok audience. That's not putting it in front of the overall general audience. And if they want to tout and say that we've got, 43 million
is what they say.
Yeah, million fan base in the US, television audiences at record numbers, etc. And then put this information in front of them in the way they're going to see it. Because I'm on TikTok maybe once a week for 5 minutes. I try doing the TikTok thing. It's not my thing. And so why are you going to continue putting something only to one audience and not the people who are maybe on Instagram or on YouTube more? Right? It makes no sense. If you're going to create content, then put it everywhere and put it in prime time on an actual broadcast. There's time for it. There's room for it. So yeah, I don't know. I think we can continue to analyze this and unpack this all we want to. The bottom line is if F1 wants to continue growing, they have to listen to their fan base because we're the ones who are driving the numbers. And even as creators, we can only say so much before they finally listen. But I think they're investing way too much money into the sport right now to accept losing those followers, losing those numbers. But
well, we'll see what
closing thoughts.
We'll see. No, I agree. Like you're at a point where you've got to change it up. Like it's going to get old, right?
Yeah.
Like we've talked about this numerous times. There's only so many sprint races you can add. Domenicali, we know Domenicali wants to keep adding more. He just said it recently. We know that they are probably going to keep trying to force these street races on us because they can have these big city, massive spectacles. But
then give us good racing.
You can only do so much of that before racing gets to the point where it's like, all right, this is not exciting, or the casuals are not being enticed.
Well, it's already not exciting. I mean, I think the most exciting thing from the Chinese Grand Prix was when Stroll hit Ricardo and then denied any real responsibility for it. And that was even a week later, we're all like, what?
Yeah. No,
any other person, and they would have been let go from the team for doing this stuff. But no, it's nepotism that everybody's holding on to right now. And that's because it's all they have. There's nothing more exciting that came from that. So, And that's unfortunate because, again, that's not exactly talking about the sport itself. That's talking about the drama within the sport that no one cares about. But that's all, again, that's all we've got.
No, totally.
So, anyway.
We'll see how it pans out, but for sure, there's a lot that can be done. There's so much that there's a ton of opportunity, and it's just a matter of F1.
What sticks?
What will they do? How are they gonna step up to the plate at this point? So,
yep.
Well, on that note, we'd love to hear from you. You can follow me and chat along with me over on X, Twitter at Vincenzo Landino.
I am,
and I know you can find Vanessa
at the VF Castro.
Chat with us. We want to hear from you. We can engage around the topics that we talked about today, or if there's something else that you want to hear for the next recording, let us know. Go and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Let us know how much you love the show. And if you do leave a review, leave a question in there and we'll definitely talk about it on the show. We'll even shout you out by name. On that note, I'm going to sign off for the day and hopefully for the weekend soon. V? enjoy it. Enjoy not having the kids, because once they come, you realize how important sleep is.
Yeah,
that's probably what I'll try to do at some point.
That's a long ways away for me. So, you know, you enjoy your sleep. Yeah. And yeah, guys.
If I can get some, yeah.
Yeah. You have any questions, let us know.
Yeah.
We're here for you.
We'll talk to
Bye.
You. Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.